This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection. I will introduce my guest shortly. As those of you who've been listening the last couple of broadcasts, I've been trying to approach our program a little bit differently by trying to increase people's ability to think clearly about making decisions and talking about logical fallacies when people are discussing and arguing and trying to convince you of certain things out there. The truth of the argument really rests on two things, the logic of the argument and the evidence. And you can present very good and appropriate evidence but have poor logic, and therefore you have a logical fallacy, which the results that people are trying to convince you of is not true. And I've been discussing this to some degree. In the last two times, we've used arguments from authority and some subtypes of that. The first one was just argument from authority. Doesn't mean that somebody who is an authority, if Dr. Thad Woodard says this, that doesn't automatically mean it's true. And also, if Dr. Thad Woodard says, well, everything in the world is a conspiracy, that doesn't make it true just because I believe everything is a conspiracy. There has to be some logic and reason and evidence behind it. Another subtop I want to mention today is an appeal to virtue or sincerity. It doesn't matter either that an argument may be logical just because the person is very sincere or very virtuous who believes it. They may have been fooled by an observation, or they may have a faulty memory of what happened. So the virtuosity or sincerity of a person does not also lead to a logical answer or correct reasoning. Just keep remembering you have to look for good evidence and good logic when trying to decide if what somebody's trying to tell you is right or wrong or not. Today we're going to be talking about dyslexia. This is a relatively common problem that we're going to learn a lot about from Marilyn Anderson. Marilyn's been involved in this issue for a long time. In fact, she's so interested in it that she became a founder of Gateway School and Learning Center here in Anchorage. And she brings to the studio today Doris Cerny, who's an educational specialist at Gateway School as well. Doris and Marilyn, welcome to Line One.
Thank you.
Well, let's do what my basic first thing is. Let's define what we're talking about today. Who wants to tell me what they think they mean by dyslexia?
I'll take on that definition. We picked it up for the IDA, International Dyslexia Association. It is a specific learning disability that is neurological in origin, characterized by difficulties with accurate, fluent word recognition.
All right, so what I heard here is that it has something to do with the way our brain is operating.
That's true.
And it has to do with fluency of language, how we interpret language, how we understand what is said.
And how fast we will be saying it, how fast we would read something.
Okay.
Processing
so
it.
Slowness of understanding or misunderstanding or, I'm going to use another big word, processing of the information.
Right.
All leads to dyslexia. And it has its origins in, I'm going to kind of be crazy, but hardwiring. This is a neurologic problem. Mm-hmm. And that leads to an issue where probably we may be jumping ahead. We don't change that. We don't have the ability to rewire things correctly. We work around that to some degree.
Well, we can reroute the way students learn, but it is not fixed. It is with a person forever, but how to cope with and learn new strategies to go around in the language area.
You know, there's a lot of, and again, if I'm getting off and too much medically for you guys, you just tell me, but you just came from a big meeting, so maybe this comes up. That we're talking a lot now about plasticity of the nervous system and how things can be changed, especially early in life. So I was going to ask you if there's a way to change that, but it dawns on me. I mean, we don't recognize this till later. We don't recognize it till kids are well into school. There's no real way to diagnose that prior to asking kids to read or feedback. Is that
well,
true?
You might notice a child, especially in auditory processing, maybe not following through with directions, very slow in speaking, getting the words the sounds mixed up. And so you're thinking that they are just not paying attention. Uh-huh. Actually, that auditory processing is not in a traditional way.
In addition to that, they'd be having difficulty with sequencing, numbering, mm-hmm. Remembering names or places, getting those confused up or down, forward, backwards, not understanding left to right. You might still see some of those characteristics being symbolized from a first, second, third grader.
So it is possible before the reading age that we might have some hints that there might be some
right.
dyslexia.
Hmm. However, a lot of times people think of dyslexia only as the written language. And so when the child is not following, able to follow that processing of auditory, they might think of it as some other problem. And it could be a hearing struggle. On the flip side, a child who is very auditorily receptive and expressive, people are saying, well, this child's going to do extremely well in school. And then there's the visual breakdown, and a child is not picking up reading in a traditional way. And people are saying, what's wrong here? This is such a bright child. And then that breakdown in the reading, in the visual part, is just shocking.
There's a couple of thoughts that come to my mind. In medicine in general, there's a tendency to think, well, if everybody's failing in school now, we're going to think it's dyslexia. But I want to be quick to point out that there are other reasons for that. There could be nutritional reasons. There could be right. medical reasons. So this is failure in school is a hint that there may be something going on more than, Doris, as you mentioned beforehand, laziness, which is commonly
right.
said. They
not
may be
trying
lazy
hard
and
enough.
Not trying, but maybe it's more than that, and that certainly should be investigated because it's such a waste of faculties and things mm-hmm. if we just write these kids off early.
I think sometimes the parents that have come to talk to us but will say, well, my child doesn't reverse the B and D's or, you know, confuse P and Q's.
Right.
And those are just some tendencies that we might see in an individual where someone may not have that problem, but they may have difficulties with putting numbers in the right order or just making a seven properly and not reversing that mm-hmm. or organizing their thoughts or written or oral.
The other thing I was going to say along the line of it's not the only thing that happens. I mean, if you have school failure, there may be multiple reasons, is that there's often a bell-shaped curve in natural things. I mean, there's an average maybe. We can say this is a typical child with dyslexia, but there may be kids who have multiple other things along with it that make it seem much more pronounced or have it so minor or so mild that it may go for a long time before it's recognized. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, go ahead. It's very common that they'll have, it may go undetected, or we have a gentleman at our school said, I never told anyone until I was in my 40s or didn't
right.
realize that
right, right.
it was until I was an adult.
Right.
Because they've learned to cope.
Uh-huh.
They've learned strategies to become successful in whatever they were doing. Or they could have become the behavior issues where this kid becomes a delinquent and all kinds of issues manifest itself in school.
Yeah, and we may want to come back to why psychological comorbidities, we both learned that all these new
words.
We may discuss that, may derive from these issues as well. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our guests today are Marilyn Anderson and Doris Cerny, and we're talking about dyslexia. So any comments you have, any questions you might want to ask, please feel free to contact us. And you can do it in these ways. You can call us directly today, right now, at 550-8433. That's our local number, 550-8433, until just before 3 o'clock today. Outside or toll-free, 1-888-353-5752, or you can email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. And remember, we rebroadcast between 7 and 8 tonight, and there's nobody here. I'll be doing something else with my kids, so it's if you want to get the questions answered, this is the time to do that. What's felt to be the percentage or the prevalence of this problem? How many kids in the United States? We have an idea about this?
Well, we figure it's actually studies between 15% and 20% of the student population. So that's one out of four, one out of five. It's a big situation, and some students can manage. Others need direct intervention, sequential intervention.
And I guess some kids there's no core relationship to intelligence or their work habits or anything, so that a kid who just happens to be a little bit more intelligent and has some dyslexia may be able to cope and hide it or not be discovered until later into the school when things are getting a little bit more, we're asking a little bit more out of them. Is that fair to say?
That's true. The other part of the characteristics, too, is, you know, they spell words the way they sound. They have sloppy handwriting, inconsistent with work, struggle with academics, unable to express themselves orally, and become angry or discouraged quickly. So when we start seeing those behaviors or characteristics being manifested, then we're definitely looking at a child that has those tendencies toward dyslexia.
Okay.
Well, and I think we see children who are intelligent, who have a good family that's worked hard with language and just done a lot of work there. Children can maintain, and then we'll see usually a breakdown in around sixth grade, where they just need way more than just what they've brought to the table as far as education from their background.
I've heard it said from people that I know well in the school district that in the first couple years of life, kids are just asked to listen. They're just absorbent. About the third grade, you're starting to be asking to feedback. We get stuff out. So third grade picks up things. Sixth to seventh grade as you go into junior high is another time, then high school and then college. Those are big jumps in what we're asking of people at times when things may be harder all of a sudden for kids. Does that fit with what you're saying?
Well, in the way our schools are set up, we call it primary, first through third, and that's when we're teaching listening, basic skills, reading, handwriting, how to form letters, how to put them on paper, basic math. And then starting in fourth grade, then there's gathering of information. And so if you haven't learned those basic skills during the primary years, you're not going to, because the emphasis now is, as you said, is changing to gathering and putting on the facts and putting it together, and then again later on to interpret what's being said. So those basics, if a child's missed them by third grade, studies have shown that by ninth grade, they will not have picked up that reading, that language piece, unless there's been very direct intervention.
Okay, we have a caller on the air, and I want to take them, but I want to come back to this idea of missing, if I can remember to do it, missing it early and having difficulty coming back with it later. It's something we've talked about with how the mind and the brain works. So, Augustus, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Greetings, mind and brain. I'm a fairly intelligent person, hold a graduate degree, but I had speed reading in high school, which is I attribute to getting better grades later. But what I noticed was at some point I couldn't study in various places, and I attributed it to place and went on to research that. And it turns out it seems that I've always named it pseudo-dyslexia. That's not a proper term or anything. But under fluorescent lights and now compact fluorescent lights, have trouble focusing my attention. Reading, I can read, reread, and the comprehension just is not there very much until I take it to outdoor lighting or incandescent lighting. Huh. And so after all these years, it seems to be the 60 hertz fluorescent flicker and perhaps the non-ionizing radiation off the ends of the... Relate dyslexia to fluorescent light and brain function. It's kind of a psychophysics area, but I think it pertains to dyslexia and the growing amount of dyslexia since the late 50s.
Good question. Let's see if we have some information on this.
Yeah. We've experienced with some of our students that using a color overlay, a clear plastic, whether it's blue, pink, green, yellow, has made a difference with students with reading. One of the programs that we've used is the Erlen. That has been very successful in helping those students. There's also Dr. Keenan out in Eagle River that does vision therapy, and we've had some parents say that that's been successful for their, you know, that they go through various eye exercises and looking at things, but another student's parents have said that it hasn't been successful for them. So it's kind of a controversial in regards to maybe some of the vision therapy treatments that might be there.
Let me comment on that. I'm familiar for a long time, years, to the Erlen system, which works very well for a lot of people. It changed a friend of mine's life, but has nothing to do with the flicker factor.
Right.
You know, in other words, you can gel the lights or colored lens or over the reading material. It has to do with the nature of the fluorescent itself, and people haven't been trying to tie that in.
Well, we in our school we have used full spectrum lights, and
still a balanced meal in a lead bowl. It's a fluorescent flickering light. The spectrum is good. I mean, better, but it doesn't
right.
have anything to do with it, I find.
So there's a lot to work on with the lighting. There's still that research in how to help children or any of us adults too.
Right.
There is a book called Making the Letters Stand Still about, and you're probably aware of that since you're involved with Erlen.
I don't have much to add. I don't know much about this. I know in my research I found some information on something called the scotic sensitivity
right.
syndrome, which is related maybe to the Erlen syndrome, which seems, again, I'm not sure everything's known, but it may be wave lengths of light that has something to do with it. And I guess I'm not sure if you know more about it, but that's as far as I think we can take that particular issue.
Right. It's the wavelength and spectrum is not really involved in what I'm talking about. It's it's the stroboscopic effect that's a stress. It's an industrial noise that comes with all fluorescent lightings. And the people don't realize that, I mean, they try different methods with their children under the wrong light.
Okay.
It doesn't work. Right. Anyway, that's, thank you for addressing that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing it up. You have a good day.
Thank you.
I have also an email. This is from Joan. My daughter's is in the fourth grade and doesn't learn well from flashcards. She was diagnosed with dyslexia a year and a half ago and received special services at school. I'm looking for an alternative way to teach her the multiplication tables. Do you have a recommendation? She seems to learn well from things she hears.
One of the programs that we've been incorporating into our school is a Linda Moo Bell program called On Cloud 9. And it also is a multisensory where you're looking at the visual, the auditory, and the kinesthetic. So with the flashcards, you want them to be writing those numbers in the air. So if you had 3 times 4 and you're writing it vertically and had the number 12 on the bottom, you'd ask, what's your top number? What's your bottom number? What's your middle number? And what you're being able to do is helping them to picture those numbers and being able to recall them back.
Okay. Let's hope that will help, Joan. And again, I was taken back a little bit. So 15% to 20% of individuals or children now are felt to have some manifestation of dyslexia.
Right.
Fairly common. And what percentage of those do we think are being picked up and addressed early? Oh, and then I want to make sure I get back to this. What happens if we don't pick it up till later? But I'll come back
right.
to that. So how effective are we currently of picking these children up that are having this problem, and where is it picked up? How has it come to attention? Is it just the school system?
That's a good question. And I think we see these children in the stores, in the restaurants, in our schools, and perhaps in Sunday school, scout meetings. We're seeing children that aren't functioning commensurate with their intelligence, and I'm not sure we are picking these children up. They might be within the range. of average to below average. However, children where language is really happening, they should be actually performing in a reading level two grades ahead of where they are. And so when we say, well, they're average, but they should be two years ahead, so that bell curve can be deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a huge frustration level for teachers, parents, and children, knowing that they should, if you want to use that word, but they could, they ought to, whatever, be performing better. And someone knows that instinctively or intuitively, but how to really get it down on paper is a difficult thing.
I also kind of see that within the school systems, not just Alaska, nationwide, that a child needs to fall 2 to 3 grade levels before their academic, right, in order to get those special needs. And we see that these children are, you know, average to above average intelligent students, but they're just falling through the cracks. They're not able to get their needs met and being able to be taught in that multisensory manner. Mm-hmm. A lot of times around the conference time, we start getting phone calls from parents saying, oh my gosh, my child's failing this class and we don't know what to do and we've tried tutoring. And so then we end up in further discussions about doing an assessment and what we could make recommendations for.
Before I get it, I want to get back to your comment, Marilyn, about if we don't do things, if things aren't addressed fairly early in life, then later in life it may be much more difficult. Do you want to comment on that some more? I think you were saying, like, by ninth grade that these kids are going to really have some lifelong problems.
Well, that's true. It's certainly better to prevent rather than to remediate. And with all children really need to be taught how language is formed together. It brings a great strength to know about our language. But it's critical for the children where language is not becoming automatic. And by the time, if children aren't reading 20 minutes a day, how many words are, what's the deal there, Doris?
I think it's over 1 million words. If they read 20 minutes a day, they're being exposed to over 1 million words a day. If it was like just 4 minutes a day, it was like 1,000 words for the year that the children would be exposed to. So our goal is to get them reading, being exposed to that vocabulary, seeing those words, whether a parent's reading to them or they're actually reading themselves. But reading out loud is a really critical part of that, too.
So in light of that, if you're missing that those words and the vocabulary, even if, say, by ninth grade you were reading, there's all those words that you've missed during the years. And another really sad statistic is so many of our students are children that are not learning commensurate with their intelligence find another way, and it's usually not a way that is a positive way. They might drop out of school, and then the statistic in our prisons is about 85% have language problems. So we are spending a tremendous amount on students. If we had been able to do it in the first 3 years of education, our society we'd be rich, mm-hmm, because we would receive from those students a payback into the community rather than having to pay out.
Another question that comes to my mind is often, or others may be thinking, well, there's something to do with today's society, and we're making kids have this problem. Do we know whether these problems existed previously, or are happening more often, or just went unrecognized, or like many things we have in medicine, we're not sure because we don't have good data on those questions here.
Well, I do have some data here. In 1887. The word dyslexia was first used by Dr. Berlin, who was an ophthalmologist. Dr. Samuel Orton, who was a neurologist, in 1926, presented his papers to the University of Iowa and the American Neurological Association. In 1926, he identified this syndrome of specific language disability. And he separated it from mental retardation, brain damage, emotional disturbances. He proposed at that time how to diagnose and principles for remediation. But often, well, probably the majority of us or of teachers become teachers because language went well for them in
right.
school.
Right.
And so to know how to reach these children is not taught because teachers go, we all go toward what was good, mm-hmm. best for us. I also believe that there were a lot more jobs early on where we didn't have to have language. We worked on farms. We worked in factories. We were a lot of those hands-on jobs. And now we still have some of those jobs, but you can't get one unless you fill out the paperwork.
Right.
You can't just say, I'm going to work for you for free for a week. Try me out. And so filling out those forms are... stop you right there.
Okay. Let's go to another caller that we've got. Katie, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hello. I'm a 30-year-old dyslexic, survived Anchorage School District. And I just would like to and just encourage people to really build confidence in their kids with dyslexia. I had parents who were so supportive and so encouraging me that I'm very open with people and I'm honest when I apply for jobs. And I have two different college degrees and I've accomplished so many things. And I was just really taught to believe that self-confidence really helps and not to be ashamed or embarrassed by the dyslexia.
Right. Right. Tell us a little bit more about your experience. What? When did you notice, perhaps, if you don't mind sharing that with us, when you noticed you were different, where you had your problems, and then how you've managed to be so successful with education, even through the college level?
Well, actually, I went to a private school. It was first grade, and I could never read the book all the way through. I kept on having to start over again. I could never follow through. And so they took me way back to the Whaley Center and got me tested and found out I had dyslexia. And I so in second grade is when I started going through special education classes and off and on until high school.
Mm-hmm.
And graduated regular and got went to UAA and have... I just have to know what my limits are, but also push them. I guess it's kind of that well balance of life.
Mm-hmm.
And my strengths are my talking to people, and my personality definitely wins out.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what else you want to know, but it's...
Yeah, but I'm, and I don't want to get. I think one of the things that is interesting to me is what's the natural history, what's the outcome, and that people can be very, very successful and have some of these kinds of learning disabilities like dyslexia. But I'm going to guess that you, as you said, you have strengths and weaknesses, and you're going to roll towards your strengths and you work away or work around your weaknesses because we're not going to change the way your brain works. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It is, definitely. And I have to learn that I don't say learning disabled because
okay.
it wasn't until recently, until maybe the age 25, where it was dyslexia. I was always
right.
told I was learning disabled.
Right.
And so now I say I have two different forms of dyslexia, and it's like, it's just a step. It's just a, you know, I'm left-handed too. It's just one of those things that I can't change, and it's...
Right. Right.
It's a new way to strategize in life. That's all I think about. It's a different way to strategize.
Yeah. And labels have that disadvantage. Unfortunately, money follows diagnoses in a lot of ways in our country. But really, some of us are left-handed, some of us are right-handed. Some of us throw baseballs harder than others. Some can't catch. Some are lawyers, and some are artists. And that's really what we're trying to say, I think.
Exactly. Well, this is really exciting to hear this talked about on the radio because I feel sometimes like I'm alone as an adult with dyslexia.
Yeah.
And you hear about kids, especially back right. in the early 80s when I was first diagnosed, it was pretty new right. to my whole environment. And so it's just exciting to see there's all these things out there for people. So thank you very much.
Yeah, Katie, thanks for calling in.
Oh, okay, bye-bye.
Doris, comments on this?
It's just interesting that, you know, she had been labeled at an early age. It was able to help do some intervention for her. I've been curious to see how often she went with to special ed for that and if there was any stigma for her having to do with that. But the key point here is she became quite successful. There's a list of names of Whoopi Goldberg, Bruce Jenner, Cher, Greg Louganis, Rob Lowe. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Charles Schwab, Henry Winkler, that these all became very successful people in our society today.
Mm-hmm. Charles Schwab's name gets my attention because I know he's a big donator and proponent of Mel Levine's work, who is one of the, I don't know, what's the right word? He's one of the gurus in the whole issue of learning disabilities.
Right. And he was here 3 years ago.
Yeah, couple of years. Yeah,
Gateway sponsored him, and you were one of the speakers on the panel also.
Yeah, but he's really one that's been a key person in helping us understand more and more and more about how individual minds work, which is kind of one of his themes anyway.
And I think he's brought dignity to those children that were just struggling, and he has shown shown the nation really was on that these children need to be just taught a different way and their strengths. And to look at children on their strengths, and actually one of, well, our staff has been trained in his attuning.
And speaking of laziness, one of his books is The Myth of Laziness.
Right, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Well, I like what the caller had to say, that her parents were always keeping her positive and positive, looking, you know, don't give up type thing. And that's the part that makes it exciting, is to have that support group that can not label that child as being lazy or not trying hard enough. And they can go on to do whatever they want to do.
Okay. However, often we've had children say, my parents never spend time with me. And those same parents have spent 3 and 4 hours a night trying to get their child through the homework. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean my parents spent time with me. That means I was struggling with work and that was a school thing. So sometimes parents can say, man, I'm just spending all this time. And what's happening here? And sometimes that can create a real faction in a family also.
Let me address another email that's come in from Diane. She would like us to talk about auditory learning disabilities. She says, I have 2 family members with this, but it's difficult to diagnose and she feels to treat. Both family members have advanced college degrees and obviously have learned to cope before being diagnosed, but that doesn't mean that life has been easy for them or for those who live with them. So it seems like the question here is auditory issues. Y'all want to kind of address Diane's comments or questions?
Well, that's really, Gene Osmond said that is really one of the hidden handicaps, creating major academic problems for students. People and the colleges and universities are not yet doing very well at providing information with their instructors on how to reach these students. So it's kind of you're in sink or swim by yourself. If the auditory piece is not happening for you, your rate of learning, the speaking needs to be slower. You need to have more assignments put on the board so you can visually see them. You need to be able to ask questions and say, this is what I heard you say. Is this what you said? And part of it is you have to second-guess yourself, which is very scary if you're in the same room with someone else hearing a lecture and the other person heard these facts and you didn't, then you have to trust that you didn't hear. And another area of this struggle is hearing instructions on how to, you know, 3 or 4 directions, and the child might come up with the last direction, but the first 3, they missed it as was going through. Or they might do the 1. They might have gone downstairs, but they didn't hear the open your drawer and get your shoes out, and they might bring their shirt instead, which can cause some very almost angry situations in families, like you weren't paying attention or why didn't you? And a way to circumvent that is to say, what are you to do first? What are you going to do second? So we're checking each other back and forth and developing that language and those paths of what did I hear? What did I understand? what were you trying to say to me? And I think not just with children, but I think in marriages also, this whole piece kind of plays into our emphasis these days on communication, but how to ask each other rather than just bottle up our frustrations.
So what you're saying, or what I'm hearing you say, Marilyn, is this is not just an academic issue, but it's a social issue across this whole culture, especially the more we depend on verbal communication or oral communication or auditory communication, that there are those of us who do not process that information as clearly, so we don't come across as clearly, we don't understand as clearly, and doesn't mean there's anything wrong with us, but it leads to some social issues because of that. As academic.
And it could be tense in the family. How many times you heard a spouse say, I told you 3 times to pick the milk up, and why didn't you remember that?
And so then the one who processes auditorily slower might feel that they're less intelligent than the others, perhaps don't have the right to speak up because everyone else is waiting to pounce upon their say-so. And so to develop time for that one person where no one else can enter in and say, oh, well, he's trying to say this or she's trying to say that, to give them that time and no one can, their space, and then someone else can have their space. But that's that has to be a very monitored situation in a family or in a classroom.
Okay. We have another caller. I think I'd like to take this one because it looks like it's asking about genetics and heredity. Lori, you're on line one.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am dyslexic, and I didn't really find out about it until I went to college. And the professors were really up on it. They were like, oh, yeah, yeah, you're one of those. You're really smart, but you're a slower reader, and your handwriting's terrible, and you can't spell. So we'll make some accommodations for you to get through school.
And, whoa. And what's your affinity? What are you good at?
My oral skills are really good.
Okay. Anything else? I guess I'm asking because I think sometimes I've heard that artistic kinds of endeavors are sometimes a little bit stronger.
I'm pretty athletic.
Ah, okay. Well, I guess that's an art. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No problem. So then when I have children, I was fortunate enough to have gotten some information about what it means to be dyslexic and what to watch for.
Sure.
And when I was struggling with my son, I recognized right away in first grade that there was a big gap between his intelligence and his ability to blend sounds and that sort of thing. And it seems to me that I was one of the lucky ones because before they knew what dyslexia was, my mom sent me to a private school where they worked intensively with me for years so I could read. But here in Anchorage, I found that when I tried to get my son help, there was nobody providing information that within the school system so that I could get access to help for my son, and it has been quite a struggle. And if parents who have trouble reading and don't get the kind of intervention I did are going to be less likely to recognize the problem, and because I went to college, then, you know, we could afford or to be able to take out loans for the $15,000 it takes to remediate your child. And I think it's a social injustice when people who have low literacy skills then, you know, have children with low literacy skills, and there aren't services out there for these kids.
Right. And your question is, I know our school teachers are itching. I'm back to the genetic kind of issue.
Sure.
And part of your question is this hereditary? Is there a genetic predisposition in your family?
And
because
how can we prepare for that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I am not an expert in this, but I can tell you everything gets back to genes. And if it's a hardwiring problem in your mind, it's just the way our genetics are working. And there may be much more clear in one of your children, not at all in another child. And so there can be a lot of variation. But almost certainly, there is some genetic component to this, and I think you're going to see that. By the same token, perhaps your parents had some issues that were unrecognized, perhaps as well.
Sure, but you know, what we're talking about, too, is how the literacy, your needs for being a certain level of literate have to increase generation after generation.
So we also need to have a higher index of suspicion among children whose parents have had this problem, which gets back to where, Marilyn, you and Doris are. You're in the school system, or you have a private school where you're doing this. So what's the answer from Lori's for Lori's question about early recognition in particular?
Well, Lori, in our school, we do an assessment with the student, and it can be anywhere from first grade to adults. We've tested adults also. And we do a Slingerland test. We're looking at comprehension, spelling, decoding, fluency, writing, and math. And with that, we can look at those tendencies or characteristics that might indicate that there is a dyslexia. And then we would recommend, based on the number of errors on the Slingerland test, should this child be just tutored? Do we need to do some decoding skills with them, handwriting skills, or do we need recommend a summer school program, which is a three-week from 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock program that we do? Or the third option would be an enrollment in our school. And our intention of our school is that we only want those students for 2 to 3 years, usually it's 3 years on an average, so that we can teach them how to learn and then teaching them to become successful so that they learn to become advocates for themselves of being able to ask, I don't understand this. Can you explain it to me in a different way? A lot of times the students are scared to ask because they feel dumb or stupid if they're going to ask those questions. I am aware that in the school district, you can look on their website. They also do a Slingerland test that you – and I don't know the schedule of when they do it or how you get yourself on that list. But they also would be able to provide that. And there are a certain number of schools in the school district that are lottery for getting into a multisensory classroom. And that's what I would encourage. How old is your son?
He's in third grade. He's 8. He's received individual one-on-one intensive services at this point.
Okay.
But previous to that, because there was the interest in making sure he had failed for 2 years, and even though he had the Slingerland and the Slingerland said, oh, yes, you qualify, you know, you get the Slingerland in September, and they tell you have to wait until summer to get taught to in a way in which he's going to learn. So,
well, let me, you know, I think you're hitting on, again, an area where I understand there's some difficulty. It's not, I don't know, I don't look at it as the school district's not trying to do it. It's got plenty of other responsibilities, but we all need to make everybody much more aware, and what Marilyn has done is formed a private school, Gateway School and Learning Center, where they're addressing this particular need. So I think I'm trying not to promote anything in this particular program except education and knowledge, but there are the resources here. It's just sometimes it's hard to get that information out
there. Well, my point was just that I think it's really hard for people to access if they don't have the ability to provide transportation or have the funding on their own.
No arguments there. And
okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling us your story. I appreciate it very much, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Other comments about Lori are in general about this issue of finding these kids early enough?
A lot of times the parents that I'm talking with after we've done the assessment, they've come to us because they're so frustrated, you know, in trying to find what can I do for my child? Where do I need to go? And it's usually been a word of mouth, did some Google on the internet, trying to find some avenue of being able to find. And typically parents are intuitive. They realize that their child is struggling. They're not being successful, or whether they see it at home or in their classwork. But the parents have an idea that there is something that's not right. And then they will come and ask us to further explore this and with the evaluation, and then we can provide some direction for them.
I think we just announced, or I think Dr. Woodard announced, that the Alaska branch of the International Dyslexia Association was just voted in at this conference last week. And through that, here in Anchorage, or actually here in Alaska, one of the ideas is to band together and bring more information for parents and educators, but especially for parents to find out where they can get help and to bring speakers to that situation. And I'm sure that the community will be hearing more about that now as this branch has been formalized.
Okay. I have actually suddenly three or four more emails, and I do want to get into the issue of what can be done, what mm-hmm. what do you do as teachers, but I think this is an important question coming from Denise. It says, how can dyslexia be diagnosed? So there's actually a number of questions here. Well, what qualification, certification, education should a parent look for? At my son's conference last week, his teacher and the principal who attended the conference said that they were not supposed to use the word dyslexia. What do you make of that? My son attends in the Anchorage School District.
Well, with the conference that we just attended, one of the presenters talked about a series of tests that they do at their school, which is an IQ test, oral language test, word recognition, decoding, spelling, phonemic awareness, fluency skills, comprehension, and vocabulary. And when you look at the composite of those tests, you're going to be able to identify if there is that dyslexic tendency.
At what age is it?
You can do
suggested
it.
At any, so it's age-appropriate?
Age-appropriate.
Okay. All right.
I did ask specifically because in our school we do not do an IQ test.
Right.
You know, can you still make somewhat of a diagnosis without that IQ test? And the speaker said yes.
Mm-hmm.
To get an official diagnosis, you would go through the IQ test, or a psychologist would be able to administer that and come back with that. In some cases, we had an adult that needed it for the work because he needed to be compensated. He needed some additional assistance in order to do his job successful. Our report wasn't sufficient enough, and by going to a doctor and getting that official diagnosis, he was able to get some additional services that would have helped him to be successful in the school.
Mm-hmm. What about not to use the word dyslexia? The principal had commented on that. Is that something you're familiar with? What do you make of that?
Right. Obviously, there's. It was amazing because here's this huge organization that's mm-hmm. been going on for 50 years and keeps gathering
international. Dyslexia Association.
But if it's, we could drop that word
right.
and just say if a learning problem is presented, let's do something about it.
Right.
Let's not wait for the D word.
The label.
Yeah. The label, yeah.
Yeah. You know, money raises its head at every mm-hmm. turn. I mean, you might ask yourself, or I ask myself, well, if we can test everybody, why don't we just test everybody? We can pick and choose, find out which ones. But there's also variability in how it's affecting them. And then there's a big cost to how you're going to address all these. But I remember hearing Mel Levine say 15 years ago, I mean, what we ought to be doing is addressing education to everybody's strength. That's everybody ought to have their
yeah.
own way because everybody's different. But that's expensive, and that's when reality butts ahead against what we know. But nevertheless, we ought to be making an effort, and now you have to be 2 years behind, and then people get real interested in the Anchorage School. Not that they're not trying, but there's a limit about the money.
And unfortunately, then it gets way more expensive if a child gets left.
Right.
Yeah.
I had a parent explain to me that their son was exceeding in math skills and science and biological classes and stuff. I mean, just taking pre-college classes and so forth, but was struggling with the writing process, and he needed that additional services. And, you know, with her persistence, she was able to get some assistance for her son that you typically would not have been labeled that he needed that. But he definitely was not going to be successful as he continued his education quest.
Okay. I've got two people on the telephone and three emails, so we're absolutely not going to get to all of this, I don't think, because I really think talking about what we can offer these kids is an important one. But here's one more email that I think is of worth talking about. Sabrin, why do some professionals diagnose term symptoms such as ADD but not recognize dyslexia? I mean, there have been very common popular exposés about there's no such a thing as ADD, for example. My son was tested and labeled as ADD, but it fits the description of dyslexia given moments ago. His greatest difficulty is oral and written information, getting information back out of his brain. His comprehension is great, but he has extreme difficulty expressing himself. How can we help him?
Wow, it sounds like you know a lot. I think we see a lot of students that have both struggles in the academic area and then struggle with the ADD and the hyperactivity and the inability to focus.
So they both can go together. There's no reason why they can't be separate or together.
And they need to be treated differently. I mean,
they have their own challenges.
They do. Mm-hmm. And a structured, sequential process like we teach helps that ADD child, but then there's that whole other piece that we're not, that other behavioral piece that is not going to be cured by learning how to learn.
And the ADD is typically we're looking at as a behavioral disability rather than just a learning disability. But you can have those learning issues along with that.
Okay. Let's talk briefly. I've got some people hanging on the telephone, but I want to talk about what can we do? What are the options within the teaching profession that help? You've kind of hinted at some of the comments, but I'd like to just flesh some of those out while we have the chance.
I would initially just get testing. Figure out where you can, whether it's tested in the school district with a psychologist or, you know, find a private school that's doing this assessment, that you can find out if your child is falling into these categories. From that, they would be able to make the recommendations of, you know, they need to be in a multisensory type of learning class where you're doing visual, auditory, and kinesthetic learning simultaneously. And that would make them learn how to learn and to become more successful in the education.
Okay.
I would begin to kind of declutter life and give and scheduling. Unfortunately, in our today's society, that's very difficult, but it does affect the whole family, where children need quiet. They might need their own space. They need time to discuss things and to make room for that, a one-on-one discussion, asking children what are they thinking about and developing vocabulary. Vocabulary is a huge issue. What was one of the words the other day? What does unique mean? And we thought everyone knew what unique meant, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. So not to assume that children, just because something has been presented, that the child knows it. To overteach, but teach to the intelligence, not to dumb down learning, not to... So find another thing that's big is to find out what this child's passion is, what they're good at. If they're good at sports, go with sports while you're remediating the learning. Mm-hmm. If they're... find that passion in them and give them those kind of books, read to them. One of our things when our children cannot read and they're young, we do a lot of oral reading to children, but after they learn how to read, as a family, we drop off that oral reading, and children still need to hear those words and put it together and discuss, what did you hear? What is the character doing? And helping them develop pictures about what they're reading and hearing, not just looking at movies, video games, television, but this communication.
What I hear you saying is developing a mental image of the written word, not just watching visual cues. Okay. All right. Another caller. Linda, you're on line one.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I have a daughter who is dyslexic. She's 32 now, she made it through college. But one thing we did was she compensated through ninth grade with the problem. We had her tested and as a sophomore and found out she did have a very high IQ, but she was still having serious problems. And you had mentioned Dr. Keene. And when she came back from college after her freshman year, she went ahead and did a lot of the exercises that he had her doing. She only had like a six-week period to do this in before she went back. And it just made the biggest difference in her life, and it helped her tremendously in her volleyball. She was down there in a volleyball scholarship, and she said it helped her peripheral vision. It just did a lot for her when she went through that. But I know you're talking about what teachers or what, you know, schools can do. But one thing parents can do is be sure they make the teachers and each individual teacher their child has aware of the problem, because it may be in a file somewhere, but that does not mean it's read by the people that are working with the students. And the person that tested my daughter also made sure that that information went down to her college, and then we followed up by mentioning to them, too, that she had had this problem.
Okay. Thanks very much, Linda.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. We only have, we're getting down to a couple minutes. This has been another very, very fast hour. And there's a lot of the questions relate to what can I do, where can I get more information. On our website, I have put the link to the International Dyslexia Association and Gateway School. Are there other things, places you can think of that we need to talk about? Or is that going to be a good enough link to get people started who might want? And put in Mel Levine's name, I guess, for sure. And there are, he has a number of books written for the public about how, what we really know about how minds work and strategies. And there is an online newsletter called allkindsofminds.org, which is a free organization as well. Allkindsofminds.org. I know that, and I forgot to put that
right
on here.
I think Love and Logic has become one of our programs in our school of communicating with our children.
Love and Logic.
Loveandlogic.org or .com, I can't remember. Just, you know, a child forgets his homework. Oh, wow, I feel really bad about that. What are you going to do about it, you know? And just teaching them responsibilities. It's a different language and helping them to become more successful.
Yeah. So us as parents and teachers doing what we need to do, but also teaching the child how to become that person themselves, and how to be tenacious, how to remember, how to be responsible, and to help them at this time of life rather than waiting when they're out there in the real world and responsibility is taught in a very much more severe way.
Another topic in the last minute or so is I often like to ask is, what about myths? There's got to be a ton of myths around this problem.
We typically hear children, parents come in and said, my child's lazy, he doesn't try hard enough, he's behavior issues, he's getting into fights all the time. Girls, the same thing. They don't care about this, their rooms are messy, they're disorganized. Marilyn, can you think of others that...
Well, and a parent might say, well, I know my child isn't dyslexic because he doesn't reverse the D's and B's.
Okay.
And yet...
That's
not all it is. And absolutely.
They have beautiful handwriting, but they can't spell.
Well, thanks once again to our guest Marilyn Anderson and Doris Cerny of Gateway School. If you have some interest in learning more, please go to our website. You can listen to this podcast at any time at your convenience, and there's some links as well. In 2 weeks, I'll be back. I won't be here next week, and we'll be talking about the United States and Western Europe healthcare systems with NPR Deputy Supervising Editor Joe Neal. So tune into your health and learn more on Line 1, Your Health Connection, next Monday, November 17th. For KSKA, this is Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
This has been Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email us at line1@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.